realfaith.org.au. This is a warning for parents that due to the adult themes being discussed in today's program, it is not recommended for young listeners.
Outwardly, everything's okay, but I think kind of underneath, you know, I just know like I'm still really fractured, and because I don't have the full memories back or full healing, you know, I think it's just that kind of continual battle for me, because I think for me, you know, my default is constantly, you know, that I'm bad, that I'm evil. And so that's actually like operates sadly kind of underneath my day-to-day existence.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, once again, today we're talking about a very, very heavy topic, satanic ritual abuse, or SRA. So once again, parents, you might want to have your children involved in an activity in another room while you listen to today's conversation. Our guest once again is Donna, who is a satanic ritual abuse survivor, and she's sharing her story. Also joining us once again is Christian counselor Deborah Battersby, who specializes in issues related to childhood trauma and abuse and has counseled satanic ritual abuse survivors. Welcome back to the program, Donna and Deborah.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
Glad to have you back on the program. And before we get started, Donna, sharing your story, I want to read a little bit from your testimony. You wrote, "My mind was fractured and disassociated so that memory fragments or parts of self were formed to hold the trauma. My past was amnesic, buried in terror and extreme fear. I disconnected and rejected myself as a survival mechanism and lived in the safety of my head." So now going back to last time, you were sharing with us about the time that you went to two ladies who were praying for you. And right in the middle of that prayer, you suddenly found yourself in a different personality, like in the mind of a teenager. Is that kind of what you shared?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. A teenager who believed that the abuse, because I knew that I had been abused, I just kind of didn't really have a lot of story around that, believed that it was her fault, like she caused it.
And so that's what was going on inside of you. And you also shared that they were not fazed by it. They just continued praying and knew that Jesus was stronger than any evil spirit that might have been impacting you or trying to control you.
Very much so, and that it was directly linked to like the amnesic trauma that had happened, and they'd experienced that before and were able to kind of minister in and speak to that and, you know, really use Jesus to kind of, I guess, to show who was boss.
Wow. And so it's comforting to know he is boss. Greater is he who is in you than he that is in the world. God is stronger.
Yeah, because it's such a disempowered state that a survivor is in, it's very hard to think that anything other than the abuser or abusers are more powerful. And not like I believe like love and goodness is definitely more powerful, but when you're in those moments of fear and terror, it's not like, you know, just, you know, that those concepts become really easy.
Now, Deborah, help us understand from a counselor's perspective, what is this called?
The clinical diagnosis would be dissociative identity disorder. It was previously known as multiple personalities, but that's been changed. I guess to sort of make it really easy to understand, through my work with survivors of abuse, it's where the child, and it's often it's a young child, experiences overwhelming abuse, whereby I guess it's almost like they lose their mind. It is so intense. It's so intolerable. It's like there's a part of their brain that literally just short circuits, shuts down. But because they're still actually conscious through whatever it is that's happening, there is a part of them that is still conscious. So then that becomes the part that experiences the abuse. And then when it's all over, continues to carry the abuse, but then it gets pushed away behind an amnesic wall, so that then when the rest of the person becomes conscious again, whether it be later on after the abuse or even the next morning when they wake up, it's almost like they can convince themselves that that didn't happen. And so because they've still got to get up and often go to school, engage with the family and what have, get on with normal life. If they still held a conscious memory of what happened, say, the night before, My personal belief is I think we'd have children suiciding.
I agree. They would go insane.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is, for me, based on the stories that I've heard and how people have survived, dissociation isn't something to be feared. It's actually something to be in awe of, because I believe it's actually God's ultimate gift of grace and mercy on our humanity, that when children do experience such horrors that most people can't even begin to imagine, the brain has a way of actually managing that until they get to a time in their life where they can actually get the help that they need.
I think that's really great that you say that, because I believe that God gives us the gift of dissociation to survive.
Totally.
And I think that what happens is that it becomes something that's seen as a mental, disorder or a mental health issue. And that's not to say that that hasn't, for example, been part of my journey. You know, I've experienced a lot of depression and suicidal ideation and obviously substance abuse, but I don't see myself as mentally ill.
No.
I just see myself as, somebody that has experienced extreme trauma. And because my mind has been fractured through dissociation, I'm not whole. I don't operate with a strong sense of self. So if things come up and I get triggered, or, you know, that those parts of memory get activated, I go back into those predominantly fear-based states and a shame-based identity. Because, you know, ultimately God wants us to heal. He wants us to be whole.
Yep.
But that's a process and a journey.
Absolutely.
And when your mind's been fragmented and off into various parts or personalities or whatever you want to kind of call that, you know, that's, again, that takes time for that to come up.
But I think even further to that, Donna, is, which I'm sure has been part of your experience, is that if all the parts of yourself that held trauma memories came to the surface all at one time, you would probably go crazy.
I think so. And I think we see that. And I think there are people that are, you know, that have gone psychotic and are in mental institutions.
Yes.
And I think that actually, you know, if you drill deeper, I wonder.
Yeah. But isn't this God's grace that He only gives you enough that you can handle?
Yeah.
I think so. I believe that.
Yes, I do too.
Well, let's continue with your journey. So what happened after you met these two ladies? And
well, that's when I found another woman who was in America, and I started to Skype with her. And she really understood that the process of ministry to satanic ritual abuse survivors was something that you needed to do, like actually really every day, ideally, or a few times a week, etc. So whereas these women, you know, didn't necessarily operate in that thinking, and that was it wasn't enough for me. And so I really started to have a relationship with this woman on Skype, and she prayed for me, and she became like my spiritual mum and helped me in all areas of my life. And I had to go through a lot of like disbelief that I had, you know, because, you know, I didn't understand how I could be amnesic, and I didn't understand that I had these different parts, and I didn't believe myself. And that's what I would always revert back to, was this, I'm just making this up, you know.
A lot of survivors report that it's like they have moments where they just know that it's true, they just know. But then they have other times where they're going, am I just making this up?
Yeah. I've seen movies, or I've read books, or I'm just, you know, lying. And again, that's programming. I was told that if I ever had a memory, or if I, you know, that no one would believe me, that I was a liar, and I'm making it all up.
So that was part of the abuse.
That's part of the abuse.
Yeah.
And I understand that now. And so I also, you know, saw a secular therapist who helped me as well, and we did a lot of art therapy together, and you know, the drawings that I was doing was very like satanic and ritual abuse. And I think through that process, like I had to work really hard to believe myself and just to kind of say, okay, no matter what happens, I've got enough evidence to know that I have been abused and bad things have happened. You know,
it's so hard to relate, because a lot of times if something happens, we know about it. But because of all the reasons that Deborah and you have been mentioning, it was suppressed. It was kind of that God-given protective measures helps you kind of just put that out of your mind.
I think there's even more to it than that, Eric, and that is that at the absolute core of every child, no child wants to believe that their parents are capable of perpetrating what these parents perpetrate. I've come to really understand that intuitively, children are born with this understanding of what parents are meant to be like.
It's not
a cognitive knowing. It's an intuitive knowing that with their parents, they're meant to feel safe. They're meant to feel nurtured. They're, it's not something that's ever articulated. My rationale.
I think God placed that in all of us.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because if children did not have this innate knowing that how they're being treated is somehow wrong, they wouldn't be traumatized. It would just be a programmed normal.
Yeah, good point.
But why did even without SRA, when children are neglected, when they're not attended to by a nurturing parent, they become distressed? How do they know to become distressed?
Well, they know because also they need to get their needs met. It's a form of primal survival.
Yeah.
Because they actually cannot fend for themselves.
Yeah.
So it's, it's also a survival ingrained mechanism.
Yeah.
To be distressed, which is an alarm call to go and, for help to come.
Once again, our guest is Donna, who is a satanic ritual abuse survivor. Also joining us in the conversation is Christian counselor Deborah Battersby, who specializes in issues relating to childhood trauma and abuse. We'll hear the conclusion of Donna's story when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and once again, our guest is Donna, who is a satanic ritual abuse survivor, and she's sharing her story with us. Also joining us in the conversation is Christian counselor Deborah Battersby, who specializes in issues relating to childhood trauma and abuse, and has also counseled satanic abuse survivors. Now, here's more of Donna's story. So what was next on your journey to spiritual health and growth?
Well, I think it was just that, it was a process of just trying to live and do life and learn about God and develop a relationship and try and heal. And I think that that's what the past sort of 7 years has been. And I think it's just, I kind of come to this point where I'm just accepting that it's just not over yet. It's like, I feel like I'm only a quarter or halfway there. And sometimes it's hard for me to kind of say, I'm dissociative, I've got dissociative identity disorder, I've got, this trauma, because actually there's a large part of me that, functions extremely well. I would say that I'm very high functioning. I'm quite capable in my career, since getting sober. My life's really gotten back together, which is absolutely
amazing.
From outward appearances, and I'm healthy and I achieve and I'm very goal-focused and I'm helping other women and other survivors and, so I'm...
Yeah, you're leading a group now.
I'm leading a group, which is like a boxing and a writing workshop, and I am, so outwardly everything's okay. But I think kind of underneath, I just know I'm still really fractured, and because I don't have the full memories back or full healing, I think it's just that kind of continual battle for me to like I have to have a relationship with God, and I have to kind of deepen that process continually, because I think for me, my default is constantly, that I'm bad, that I'm evil, that I'm worthless.
All these things you were told as a child.
Yeah, and that, ultimately, that I should die. And, and so that's actually operates sadly kind of underneath my day-to-day existence. And, no one would necessarily pick that out on the streets or in my work environment. And people, I think, would be gobsmacked that that would be a part of my existence. But, really, unfortunately, that's kind of the state that I go to, at night, where I am just like, you know, really, God, like, can't I just go and join you? You know, like, yeah. And so that's, you know, so I guess it's just, you know, what now? Like, it's just every week I go to therapy. Every week I, you know, develop, yeah. Or, you know, every day I work at developing a relationship with God, you know, with Jesus. And sometimes I do it better than others. Mm. And I go to work and I do the things that, you know, I do. And I just really pray that God heals me and or continues to heal me. Mm-hmm. I think I have a fervent desire to give back and to do, and I, you know, and that's a great asset and strength. I think I was programmed to keep really busy, to block out my memories. Yeah. So on the one hand, that's really great because actually I achieve a lot. But on the other, it's also really difficult because it's very difficult for me to just be present and be still. So, you know, God, I am a challenge for God because actually.
Yeah, because there is that verse about being still.
Totally. Yeah, like, because God's going, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm happy to change you, Donna, but, like, you know, you're not very still, so I can't actually get in. And, you know, and meanwhile, I'm like running and I'm like, come on, God, you know, like, come and change me, you know. And he's like, yeah, but just slow down, you know. And that's the bit that I find very hard to do. But, you know, in the last couple of years in particular, I've probably moved into a more recovery healing phase that is focused on notions of love, self-acceptance, and self-care. And when I operate in those higher principles or higher ways of living and thinking, which is, you know, I think kind of living in Christ-centered identity, you know, I'm good, I deserve this, and, you know, like, be kind to me and, you know, love me, love my neighbour, attitude, then I know that that helps me. But my default, unfortunately, is still very to go into the darkness.
So you have to make a conscious decision daily to not go to your default, which is I'm bad, I'm no good, but to know, I know that God loves me.
It's not even a conscious, it's an unconscious. It's like that's just my brain goes there. So I just have to, like, the conscious decision, yes, is that I've got to pray and read my Bible and, you know, ground myself. Sometimes I don't do that. And, you know, and if I leave that for a couple of days, I start to run really, really rough, you know, like mentally.
Well, all of us are supposed to turn our days over to the Lord on a daily basis, but you're saying you have to do that.
I have no choice.
You have no choice.
And perhaps people can not do that, but still know that God's with them. But, you know, I think absolutely it's a principle of Christianity that essentially we all should do and adopt. Yeah, and it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. I actually function incredibly well. I don't know why it's so hard for me to do that. Like, it makes me feel good. I'm a better person when I do that. But, geez, to actually kind of get there, like, there's blocks. And I don't think that that's I think other people experience that too.
I think we can all identify with not being as devout and turning over our lives as much as we should on a daily basis. Now, Deborah, I wanted to ask you, you've had the privilege of journeying with people like Donna who've been in the darkest. I mean, they've had horrific things done to them as a child, the exact opposite of a nurturing parent.
Yeah.
But yet you've journeyed with them as the light gets turned on. Can you kind of share with us what that experience is like for you?
Wow. I think first and foremost, I know when I'm in that space with clients, gosh, I was getting emotional. It's sacred ground. It's absolutely sacred ground to, and I feel incredibly privileged to, I guess, work alongside with Jesus. And I don't mean that in any religious, flippant thing. It's, he and I kind of have this thing that if he's not going to work today, neither am I. Because when these kind of traumatic memories come to the surface in our humanity, there is squat that we can do to fix that. But I have the awesome privilege of bringing people to that place, even those parts that are terrified of Jesus because of the way he's been distorted in through the traumas, and seeing them actually come to a place where they're willing to take a risk and let Jesus engage with them in that traumatic memory. And I guess the only way I can describe it is that I have seen Jesus in a moment in time undo what I would refer to as Satan's best work to keep a person traumatized, under his control.
And all those lies for years that they believed.
I just watched them just dissipate. And it's, that does not say that every memory, every trauma, that their entire life is healed.
It's a process.
It's a very, very much process, and it's one that you need to be patient with the process, because if too many memories come to the surface at one time,
it's just too much.
It's just too much. And again, it goes back to that overwhelming flooding where people would lose their mind.
Would you describe it like seeing somebody having a tremendous weight lifted off their shoulders? Is that how you describe it, or how would you describe it?
Well, let me talk about how they describe it, the survivors themselves, where in one moment, whereas they're remembering the memory, they're in complete trauma. So this is not something that people can just go, oh, I think I'm going to make up this memory and I'm going to be all traumatized. It's there is an affect to it that people cannot just make up.
Yeah.
And then once Jesus engages with them, brings his truth, whether it be words, whether it be an action, all of a sudden it's like they're at peace and there's this calm that just comes in. And then when they go back after Jesus has done whatever it is that he needs to do, there's two things then that happen, is that they then look at that memory and it's just a memory. All the trauma that was in it, the beliefs, they're just gone. And then typically I see Jesus then, he says that he has another place for them now, that they don't need to stay in that place where the trauma's been, and he takes them to a safe place. And he obviously has a very distinct place that he takes with, because the number of people I've worked with, SRA and non-SRA, Jesus takes them all to this, they all describe the same place.
Is that right? How did they describe it?
As a meadow.
I'm thinking Psalm 23.
Yeah, it's a meadow. Yeah. Even just yesterday, I was working with an SRA, and they had a part went, and their experience was repeatedly being locked up in a room, and so they were terrified about going anywhere that was going to be another locked room. And Jesus said to them, "The place I have has no locked doors," and he took them to this meadow, and they're describing this place. They said, "Oh, it never rains here, but the grass is always green. There's butterflies, there's waterfalls, but they just describe this same place." And that's across nearly 20 years. It was probably about 30 years of one in prayer ministry and as a professional. People describe this place, this meadow. Or it's a mansion, and they talk about the rooms and how the rooms have got exactly what it is that they need. If they need, particularly if parts need to rest, and that's particularly with SRA, parts are absolutely exhausted from all the years of just carrying these traumas. And suddenly when they've let the traumas down and give them to Jesus, they're always overcome with, just, "I'm so tired." And Jesus says, "I've got a place for you," and he takes them. And again, they all talk about this mansion and these rooms with beds and doonas, and then there's angels in there to minister to them. So they're the kind of experiences that people report back to me. But in themselves, they just feel more peaceful.
So what a wonderful message. There is hope no matter what you've gone through, however traumatic. And unfortunately, it's horrific, some of the experiences that the people have gone through, but Jesus is stronger.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I will just say, though, that like Christians, it's worth Christians understanding that process can take years. You know, like it all sounds very lovely, and it is, you know, for that part. But, you know,
it's just one part.
You know, I'm dealing with, like, I think in my head, hundreds, you know, thousands of fragments. Again, it's just
journey.
Important to put it into context. It is beautiful, but it's
And this particular
just
lady
part.
That I was working with, yes, I've been working with her for, it's got to be 7 years now. So these are long-term clients.
So it's many visits to the mansion, to the meadow.
Absolutely.
It's not just one. Hey, it's all
roses. That's right.
Yeah.
I think God can heal in chunks.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if we should. Yeah. I think the way that God works is really up to God.
Yeah.
I don't think it's always that. Black and white.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I would agree.
Donna, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks, Eric.
Deborah, thanks for giving your insights as well.
No worries. Thanks, Eric. Thanks for the invitation. It was a pleasure to be here with you, Donna.
Thanks, Deborah.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.